Hi, friends, and welcome to the By Faith podcast. My name is Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. This season on By Faith, we're talking about the ins and outs of vocational ministry. Today, my guest is Jen Oshman. Jen is a church planter's wife living in Parker, Colorado, and serving at Redemption Parker. Jen joins me today to talk about friendships and relationships within the church for the pastor's wife. We discuss hurts in relationships, how to cultivate friendship within the church, handling requests for our time, what to do when friends in the church ghost you, and so much more. Jen gives some really great practical advice that I know will help those of you who are pastor's wives as you navigate friendships and relationships in the church. For those of you who aren't pastor's wives, I do hope you will listen. You will likely learn some things about your pastor's wife and what she navigates on a daily basis that will help you love her well. So here, friends, is my conversation with Jen Oshman. Welcome, Jen Oshman, to By Faith. I'm so glad to have you.
Thank you. This is great. It's a treat. Thank you, Christine.
Yeah. I mean, last year when COVID hit, I think we did an Instagram story thing. That was the first time I'd gotten to talk to you, and I just really enjoyed talking to you. And so I'm like, I got to get Jen on my podcast.
Thank you. This is fun.
So can you tell us a little bit about where you are, where you're serving, and maybe I know you've not always been where you are. So I'd love to hear kind of background ministry things you've done in the past as well.
Sure. Well, currently my husband and I live in Colorado, and this is where we're both from. We're both natives of Colorado, and God sweetly allowed us to plant a church 5 years ago, Redemption Parker. We'll actually turn five in a few months. We're not quite there to our fifth birthday yet. But Redemption Parker is just a joy. I serve leading our women in women's ministry here, and obviously do all the things of church planting alongside my husband and the other people on the team. And it's just been a real gift. Prior to living in Colorado, we lived in the Czech Republic as church planters, as well as in Okinawa, Japan as missionaries. So we've been married for 22 years, and basically that whole time, except for the first year finishing up seminary, has been serving in ministry, mostly overseas, but now here in the U.S. as well. And we have four daughters, and one of them is old enough to be a mom herself. So we have two grandchildren as well. So wow. I always say it's life in the fast lane.
Yeah. Do the grandchildren live close by?
No, my son-in-law's in the army. So they're stationed in North Carolina and we're here in Colorado.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's exciting. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I can't believe you have grandchildren, but that's very exciting.
Me too. Me too.
Well, you've had a lot of experience in a lot of different places, which I think will come in handy as we talk today, because we're going to talk about friendship, which is a topic that pastors' wives both want to talk about and also hate to talk about, because we tend to struggle in this area. I don't know if you feel that way, but I've definitely struggled in it. And a lot of the pastors' wives I've talked to, this tends to be an area of pain, struggle, also joy and blessing when we do have deep friendships. And so I just want to start by asking you, why do you think, in your experience or opinion, why do you think friendship is difficult for pastors' wives? And do you think it's different for us than it is for other women?
Yeah. No, I think I resonate with what you've said, Christine, and the words of the other pastors' wives that you've spoken with. I think, you know, on the one hand, like kind of my immediate response is, no, I'm just like all the other girls, you know, I want to have fun. I want to go out. I want to go out for coffee and go out for dinner and laugh and cry. And just, you know, I'm one of the girls. There's nothing different. And that is, you know, largely true, but I also know there are unique burdens and blessings that come with being a pastor's wife. And there's a few that I've kind of brainstormed as I knew this conversation was coming ahead. But one, I think, is that everybody has an idea of what their pastor's wife is like or should be like. And so there's just these preconceived ideas and expectations, you know, there's a role that people have in their mind. And what I'm finding to be true more and more is that I just don't meet that expectation. And so, there'll be, you know, maybe in a, for better or worse, you know, maybe I exceed it in some ways where maybe I'm more fun or funny than they thought I would be, but there, or then I just disappoint when I'm not maybe as available or cannot offer a specific kind of counsel to someone, or, you know, I could go on with various examples, but I think there's just, it's a role, right? It's a specific role in culture and in church culture. And so people think you should meet that role in one way or another. And we don't always. And so that can be just sort of chafing in friendships if you're not the person they thought that you were or wanted you to be. And then just a couple others that I thought of, and I'm sure you can relate to this and other pastors' wives have shared, but you know, it's hard sometimes to be vulnerable. Our husbands are known and our kids are known. We are known, at least insofar as they know things about us, but maybe don't really know us. And so it just can be tricky wanting to navigate that of just honoring and protecting your husband and kids, honoring and protecting your family, while at the same time being real and wanting to share. Like, these are the things that really do hurt or really are fun, or I don't know. It's just, even if it's a small church, your role is public. Your family is public, even if it's just to a few families, in ways that make your whole family vulnerable that you have to be aware of and careful with. And then the last way that I think it's different is in church life. For us, typically, church life is social life, you know? So our friendships largely come from church. So if something is hard at church, or if things aren't going well, or if church members or attendees are disappointed or leave or whatever, like, it affects your social life, your kids' social life, your whole network. It's not like a job where you have coworkers and you leave and you go to your different community. Like, it's kind of an all-encompassing way of life. And so the stakes are high.
Yes. I think that's what's hard to explain to those who are not in this role, is the Venn diagram of life overlaps so much for the pastor's wife, which can make the relational component of things very difficult to navigate and to know, how do we think about these relationships?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to talk about this topic from two different angles. One, the angle from our perspective and how we navigate it. And then, like, what are some of the choices that we make and can make? But then also the other angle of, sometimes the circumstances really are challenging, and how do we respond to that? So let's start with us and how we handle relationships. I think for me, at least, I like to blame things on my circumstances more than I like to think about what I'm doing that is hindering friendship. Does that make sense? And so where do you think that pastors' wives tend to go wrong when it comes to friendship?
I think for me, especially, a big temptation can be just walking in fear and being afraid of what will be gained and then lost. I think, you know, to just go back to that, like, Venn diagram of our social life and our church life. When you're in ministry, really, like, this is your life. It's 24/7.
Yeah.
There's really no separating. You don't go home from work or you don't leave the dinner party. Like, it's everything. And so I definitely can be fearful and therefore withhold, I mean, to be really blunt, like, even withhold love and affection and tenderness for other people, because I don't want to experience pain later when, as all sinners will do, you know, hurt one another, including me hurting them or them hurting me. And so I think we can try to be controlling and self-preserving, rather than all in and self-sacrificial even, and just loving as Christ loved us without condition and without hesitation, even while we were yet sinners or yet his enemies, laying himself down and loving us sweetly in that way and forgiving us. So yeah, I just think friendship can be so rewarding, and we are made for community, 100% made in the image of God for community. We were not made to be alone. And so there's risk involved. And my, for me, a temptation can be just to really withhold, to stand back and to not give of myself to other people.
Yes, I can relate to that completely. And I have to ask the follow-up question, that then how do you re-engage when you have been hurt? Because the fact is, we all, pastor's wife or not, we all get hurt in friendship. The overlapping relationships, as we've talked about, we do get hurt within church and sometimes by close friends because of the work our husband does. And so how have you learned to lay down that self-preservation and self-protection and continue to engage relationally with people and give your love to them?
I wish I could say, like, oh, I've gone through that process and arrived on the other side, right. But I feel very much in the middle of that. very much in the middle of learning how to do that. I think that, like you said, I'd rather look at my circumstances or look at the other person rather than reflect on myself and where I have sinned, where I have fallen short and been in need to repent. So I think a lot of what's required is just introspection and humility and a willingness and just a reality check. Like, I am not going to be the perfect friend. I'm not going to do this right. I'm not going to be a perfect pastor's wife. I'm going to sin. I'm going to hurt people. So let me just go ahead and acknowledge that and walk in that truth rather than think like I've got to white knuckle this situation and get it right every time. Mm-hmm. So I think just humility to begin with and a constant rehearsal of the gospel of God's love for me and his forgiveness for me. And that if Jesus Christ was willing to hang on a cross to bear my sin, then I can go to the event or the party or the Sunday morning or the thing or whatever, where the hard people are, the hard circumstances are. I can go, I can pursue because Christ pursued me in that way. Mm-hmm. And just some practical things too. I think it's really important that we're like spending some time with other pastors' wives or women that know what that feels like. Those can be just such invaluable opportunities where you share that burden with each other, with other women that know, and then, you know, they're going to point you back to what's true. Like women who, other pastors' wives who are not going to say, you know, that's fine. Don't go, you know, or don't pursue, go back into your, you know, isolation or preservation or whatever, but women who are going to say, remind me, no, Jen, this is the character of our God. Like, keep putting yourself out there because that's what he did for us and he will care for you in that. So some of those friendships and conversations are really key for keeping me pursuing Jesus and pursuing his church.
Yes. And I do want to talk about that a little bit later. I love what you're talking about because one of my favorite verses, passages related to this is Psalm 5, 11 and 12, just talks about that we can hide in the refuge of God and that he protects us. He is the protection. And so I always think about that. Like, I don't have to protect myself. I can continue to engage because God is with me. Is he going to protect me from all hurt and harm? No, but he's going to use that for my good. I can turn to him in that. I have a source of comfort and help in it. And he's called me to this. So I'm going to continue to engage. I'm wondering too, this is something that I have been thinking about more lately, is how do you know, I've kind of taken the tack of when things hurt, I need to absorb that and not ever address that with people. But I'm coming to realize like, hey, I don't think that's quite healthy. Like, I do think there's a lot of things that we absorb relationally as pastors' wives that we can't address. But when and how do we address hurt with other people in the church? Do you think we need to always absorb that? Or do you think sometimes we can address that?
I do think sometimes we have to address it, but gosh, that is so scary, isn't it? I mean, yes. Maybe not for everyone, but I find it easier to just sweep it under the rug or just run away from it or something. But, one, that's really not healthy for your own soul. And two, it's not really loving because you're sort of stuffing something rather than looking at it for what it is. And by faith that God can heal and God can help, going to someone else and acknowledging that the Spirit is at work in them and he is going to do a work in them and do a work in you. And there will be like an authentic, vulnerable relationship on the other side. So I think you know, in many instances, the better loving thing to do is to address it, but that is super duper scary. And sometimes it's not possible, right? Like sometimes we do just have to handle it and move on. But knowing when, Christine, I don't know. I mean, I think that decision has to sort of be made somewhat in community as well, like with maybe one or two other close, mature, believing Christian women friends who know you well and who can remind you of like, well, these are some things in your heart that I know about, Jen. So let me help you think about this. Or here's some things that I know about your church dynamic. Let me help you consider this. You know, I do think we have to be informed by the word of God above all. Mm-hmm. The people of God are so helpful and the Spirit of God helps us and leads us and shows us. And so I don't have a blanket answer for that, but I agree with you. Yeah. Sometimes we've got to move toward it and it can be scary, but we trusting the Spirit in us and in them that he will help us through that conversation.
And I think I'm asking, I just want to bring clarity of what I'm asking too for those listening is I'm thinking of deep relationships. I don't, you know, if it's like somebody criticizing my husband that, you know, I hear about through him, I'm not going to go and address everything, but I'm thinking of like close relationships, like a friend, a close friend leaving the church or a close friend telling me what she doesn't like about what my husband's doing. Like that's something that I'm considering. I probably need to address that a little bit more in a loving way, in a gentle way. So just clarity on that. But so I want to, I'm thinking for women who are listening and they're thinking either they've bought this idea that, you know, you can't have friends in the church, or they're thinking, I want to have friends in the church, but I don't know how to do that. Like everyone acts weird around me. I'm wondering, Jen, how have you identified potential friends within your church, and how have you cultivated those relationships in the midst of such a busy ministry life?
It can be hard. I mean, it can be really hard. There's definitely seasons where you're like, I just don't feel like there's a good friend here for me. And then there can be seasons where it's like, whoa, there's too many good friends here for me. And I think it's a seasonal thing. Just people are transient and our life stages change every year with what's going on in our own families. So I think one, we have to approach it with a flexibility, knowing that what's going on today is not going to be what's going on forever. And to just pray that the Lord helps us to be a good steward of the moment that he has us in. But what I have found in general over time is that my closest friends, and this can be risky, but it's just true, tend to be women in other leadership roles, even in my own church. So, you know, there's such a deep intimacy that comes from serving side by side.
Yeah.
And so when other women are pouring themselves out, doing this church plant with me, we're spending hours together. We're praying together. We're taking a risk together. And so that does foster deep friendship. So I think one place that I make really good friends is just the women who are serving alongside of me. And that's often inside my church plant. So of course that does make high stakes, right? For every reason that we've already talked about, but really it tends to be the people that I serve with who become my really close friends. And that gives all kinds of opportunities then for hard conversations at times, but also tons of fun and huge reward when you jump by faith together into what God has for you. There's nothing as deep and as rewarding as those friendships. And I just think they can be such a gift, very sharpening, very spurring, but very joyous too, as you pour yourselves out together. So not only are, you know, my good friends aren't only other leaders in the church, but that tends to be even overseas, like just the women who wanted to serve alongside became really good friends.
Mm-hmm. It's so helpful to have people who share in an interest, you know, that's how we make friends. That's how we make friends when we're little. We join the same team, or we both like, you know, ballet or whatever it is. And to have that same mind of serving the Lord, to me, that is such an essential component to deep friendship, that they understand those people. They may not be another pastor's wife, but they understand the demands of ministry. They are willing to sacrifice and serve themselves. And there's a joy in them because they're serving the Lord. That just really spurs me on. And I think in some ways that it's not that I have to have that, as you said, but it's something I look for and I'm very drawn to people who understand that. I'm wondering how you handle relational requests for your time, because this is a question that many pastor's wives wonder about, is I can't be friends with everyone. And sometimes there may even feel, you kind of get that sense that you, or maybe somebody might even be asking, do I have to be friends with everyone? Which I would say, no, be friendly and love everyone, but you can't be friends with everyone.
Yeah.
But this is what I deal with. I'm just going to ask you my own personal question. Is I want to be friendly and I want to be open and I want to be engaged with everyone. I genuinely do want to love people well. Often that invites, and sometimes I've realized I've even promised by the way that I do that. It's almost like promising friendship, but I can't do that with everyone. And so how do you handle that tension?
Yes. oh, I can identify with this and know what you're talking about. And it's hard because, I mean, we are in ministry because we love people, right? Yeah. I mean, the Lord has called us to this and equipped us because we, the women in our church especially, are just precious to us. And I see them on Sunday and I see them at Bible study and I'm like, I seriously do want to go have coffee and have a deep friendship with all of you. And but you're right. We are human. We are frail. We are finite. We are limited. And there's, we just can't do it. And so there's been a number of things, and this is, you know, the process of a couple decades of ministry where I've had to really evaluate this question over and over and bring it back to the drawing table every month or every season because things change. But one thing that I have done, practiced, I would say for the last, I don't know, 10 years, it's been a long time since I've been doing this practice. And that is really mapping out my weekly schedule or monthly schedule and not to a T, like I'm not a perfectionist or really like super type A about it, but in general, what's it going to look like for me every Monday morning, every Monday afternoon, every Tuesday morning, every Tuesday afternoon. And then realizing that I need to probably do my like writing and my brain work in the morning. And so then afternoons are a better time for me to meet with people. So there I've already blocked off mornings. I can't have coffee with you in the morning, but we can maybe get together in an afternoon. And then looking at my kids' schedules and blocking things off. So what I have realized is that my time for coffees or lunches is pretty limited, but for me, it's Friday afternoon. So I will have my Fridays open for lunch or coffee or a walk or whatever with newer friends, or like, I'm not talking about like my really, my deeper friends who are like in ministry with me and I'm already in relationship with them multiple times a week anyway, but like the next layer out, if that makes sense.
Right, hopefully I'm making sense.
You know, and so it's like, yes, I can get together. Let me look at my Fridays rather than feeling like, well, I'm only writing on Wednesday morning. Like, I could squeeze in a coffee in the middle of writing. That's very tempting because I want to please people. But what I've learned is that then I've lost a whole day of writing because there's no going back after that. And so I do have, because I feel called to writing, I have to protect that as well. So how to be a good steward of both the writing ministry and the in-person ministry in my community. And for me, that has been, well, Friday afternoons work really well. So let me look at the next free Friday. And that's when it will be. So sort of having that boundary, but also that flexibility in it. Another thing that is, has been helpful to me is just, as you mentioned in our, in the last thing that we talked about, is just shared interests. So I work out in a friend's garage and other girls come work out in the garage at the same time every week. And so those friendships are budding and those are fun because we exercise together in her garage. She's a trainer and she trains us. And so it's a shared interest. I'm going there anyway. So who wants to come along and go there anyway? And those friendships are fostered in that way as well. But I think at the end of the day, we do have to just pursue good stewardship of the calling that we have. And sometimes that's saying no, because you've got to pursue the writing calling. But sometimes it's saying yes, because here's the good time for that. Does that make sense? I hope that makes
sense. Totally. And actually, you're describing how I do it too. I have certain blocks of time that I know. So if somebody says, can we get together? I have those times blocked off that I can offer. And what I hate is when I have to say, well, can we do it in 3 weeks? Because that's, you know, I hate. I just don't want to be like, sound pretentious, but like I have the time. It's just a little bit further out than maybe that the person would prefer or that I would prefer. Yeah. I want to be able to, like you said, I want to be able to do it all. But having those things, it's like I can say yes because I know when it fits versus being stressed out because I'm like, how am I going to do all these things?
Another thing that I recently started practicing, which is really helpful, is our church is not a large church, but we do have two services because of the needs of our community and the space that we have. So I lately have been saying I can meet with you during second service. You know, sometimes I'm serving in the kids ministry or somewhere, but like that's a great thing because there's already childcare if you or your kid or your friend has kids and you're both in the same place at the same time. So it's like, hey, let's go worship first service. And then we can meet together during second service, you know, in a hallway or a quiet office or somewhere.
That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I love that, for people who have multiple services. Okay, good. I love the practical ideas you're given. So let's get some more practical ideas from you about some of the pitfalls and landmines that come for friendship for the pastor's wife. And there's specific ones that always come up. And so I would love to know what you would say about this. So let's talk about when a friend, so we do I want to clarify our terms, because we're talking about relationships and sometimes we think all relationships fit into all categories, but I want to talk in terms of friendship, somebody that we have let in, we do know, and they do know us. So all of these questions come in that category. So let's say a friend leaves the church, either they leave, they come and tell us they're leaving, or they leave and ghost us. I know it's happened to you because it's happened to everybody, but how have you learned to navigate that situation?
Gosh, and I have a feeling everybody listening can really relate to that question.
Yes.
In light of 2020, 2021. Yes. I mean, yeah. Even, you know, I don't know if you saw that Lifeway research where it's like 30% of people have left church, 30% are shopping around, 30% have stayed. And I don't know if that's fresh research that was like last year, but it feels like it.
Yeah.
So that's raw for all of us, people having left our church. And it's hard, you know, for those who are listening who aren't pastors' wives, it's hard to communicate like how personal that feels. We pour everything into these church plants. And so when somebody leaves, they might not be leaving for personal reasons, right? Like maybe like, oh, it's not you guys. It's our kids are looking for something specific in kids ministry, or, oh, it's not you. We're just looking for a specific population or demographic or setting. I don't know, whatever it is, but no matter how like impersonal they might try to portray it, it feels so personal. I mean, just, it hurts. It hurts really badly. So, you know, there's a number of things. One is just that reminder that we serve unto the Lord and He is pleased, and just constantly being refreshed by His word and close friends that can remind us of that truth, that we are doing this for our God who created us and went to every length to save us and to make us His own. And He is pleased. Our sacrifices are pleasing to Him. And so just being washed anew in that truth. Mm-hmm. And I don't know of any other way other than being in the Word, having worship music in the background, having good friends who say what's true, and just reminding myself, I am doing this unto Jesus, not unto the response of humans. So I think that's really important. I think there's other like maybe more like ground level things that are really important too. And one of them is, like you said, maybe having that hard conversation, maybe saying, hey, can you guys come over and we can talk about what happened, so that I'm feeling resolved and not assuming the worst when maybe the worst isn't actually true.
Yeah.
But just having an opportunity for communication to build a bridge back to each other. I think those times of meeting with other pastors' wives are huge. There's the pastors' wives in my community get together like once a season, roughly, for like, usually ends up being like a late night around somebody's fire in their backyard or something like that, where we just kind of are free to just share what happened and how it hurt and what we did. And then other women in the room who went through that maybe last year or last season, or they're a few steps ahead, can share, like, well, here's what ministered to me when that happened to me. Here's how I talked to my kids about it when they lost their friends. Here's how I loved my husband when he was hurt by that situation. And just having other pastors' wives as friends who can help you with that is so, so crucial. And I think, you know, just knowing that it will pass, like not in a pithy, superficial way, but like sometimes those wounds really hurt in the moment. But knowing that this is not how it will feel forever, and God will heal you and help you and restore you, and His mercies are new in the morning. Remembering that is helpful too. Mm. But it's hard. I don't know. Yes. I don't even feel like, I don't know if that's a really good answer. It's just hard. And I don't know the perfect way to walk through that.
You're right. It's hard. There's nothing that's going to make that feel better in the moment. And you'd have to wait on the Lord to mend that wound. I also try to look for the people who are already there, who are joyfully there and serving and growing in their faith, and think about them.
Yeah,
because I'm a glass half empty kind of person. And so for me to look at the glass half full side of it and go, but look what God's doing here. What I've always found is that God brings people in. You know, He may take people out, and He really truly might be the one taking them out, or they may be going for what we would consider the wrong reasons, but God brings new people in and renews a sense of, oh, okay, he may, I don't want to say replace those people, but he's going to gift us with people too.
Yeah.
It's not just the taking away. So I try to look for that and anticipate that.
I'm so glad that you said that, because that's so true, especially, you know, these post-COVID or current COVID, whatever the case may be in your community times, it's so easy to look at everything that's going wrong and everything that's not going according to plan. But there are so many people who have stayed and are faithful and are on mission and just, you know, it's the squeaky wheels that get the grease. Meanwhile, there's all these other wheels over here who are perfectly quiet and gliding along and pushing forward the mission. And we forget to just rejoice in that and be so thankful for that. So I'm really glad you said that, because I totally agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So another thing that often happens for pastors' wives, or it has happened, is that maybe a friend shares with us that they disagree with our husband and they want to talk to us about church issues. How do you respond to that? Especially if it's like in a friend space, like we've met for lunch or coffee and we're hanging out and we're talking about personal things, and then that comes into the conversation. How do you respond to that?
That can be so hard. I mean, I think there can be an extent where you can like engage in that conversation. You can maybe help shed light on something. Maybe it's just like your friend has not ever experienced like the philosophical framework that your church has for doing ministry. And so I think sometimes, you know, a longer conversation can lend itself well to shedding light on it and helping that friend understand. But I think that like if she is really committed to complaining about it or disliking it or just isn't feeling like it doesn't feel to you like there's a tenderness in the conversation, rather there's just a hard-heartedness, then I would just invite her to talk to my husband about it.
Let him deal with it. That's true.
And she probably doesn't want to. She probably just wants to complain to you about it, but maybe not. I don't know. But you don't have to have those conversations. Like you can participate in them up to a point, but then I think there is a point where you just bow out graciously and say, maybe take this to the elders.
Right.
See what they think. I would love for you to talk to them. That's what the elders are for. It's amazing. Go ahead and talk to them all about it.
That's exactly what I do. And I also try to say, you know, they would be glad to hear from you. They will receive you with, because they will, they're not closed off to criticism, or you know, maybe it's a good idea. Maybe their thoughts are really good ideas. And so I try to say, they're going to receive you well. Like, this is not out of bounds. This is something you should pursue with them. They're the ones who make these decisions, and they're the ones who can take your questions and concerns. So that's good.
I think because we do want to be friendly, as you said, and we do want to be friends with everybody. Like we maybe take it too far in terms of what we're willing to talk about or entertain or try to be the solution for. Like, we don't have to be the solution. There's like staff people and elders for this. We don't have to be the solution for that moment.
Right. Exactly. Hopefully that's freeing to some people out there.
Yes. Yes.
I'm also just, another situation is assumptions that we might be in a conversation with someone and we realize, oh, they've made some assumptions about me, about, you know, what I should do. Or, you know, one of the things that it bothers me when people assume, oh, you're just too busy. You know, I don't come to you with things. And these are people I want to come to me. And I'm like, no, don't make that assumption. So I'm wondering how you handle when assumptions are communicated to you.
That is hard, because that also sort of hurts, right? You're like, wait, you don't actually know me, and you missed a chance to know me in this situation. So I think it can be helpful then on the receiving end of that to maybe ask her some questions like, well, what did you think, or why did you think that? Or, you know, just graciously offer up the reality that you would love to be included or asked or known, and put yourself out there a little bit in the hopes of her knowing you better. Mm-hmm. But I think I really appreciate what you said, is like, there are assumptions that are made, and it you would rather be known. You'd rather be asked. And so I do try to say to my friends in the church, like not my super close friends, but maybe, you know, people more like in Bible study or bigger group settings, I try to make it known frequently. Like, I love to be approached. Please don't hesitate to ask. You know, and not that I can be approached all the time. There's a fine line. I know that there's a balance, but I try to say, like, please please let me know. Please ask me. Please come to me. Please shoot me an email so that you do have access to me. I'm not closed off. Might not be able to do coffee for 3 weeks, but I do want you to know who I am, and I want to share myself with you as much as I can.
Yeah. What about vulnerability? Because we all know that vulnerability is a key to friendship. That's how we grow our friendships. And sometimes even with our closest friends within the church, we cannot share everything that we're experiencing. And I've found even sometimes I will try to share in an appropriate way and they don't always understand. They can't put themselves in my shoes, which, you know, that's true. I can't put myself in their shoes. But how do you practice vulnerability in a healthy way with friends within the church?
That is so hard because we really do have a high calling and a requirement from the Lord to hold things in confidence, to protect other people's, you know, what's going on in their lives, to bless the hearer rather than curse the hearer, to be an encourager, a source of light and life, not discouragement and darkness, you know. And that can be hard because when you let down your guard in friendship, you just want to sort of air it all out there. And that's not okay to do in our role. So there's a couple things. One is that in our church setting, we have what we call core groups, and that is three women or three men who meet together once a week too, for the purposes of confession and accountability, as well as exhortation and mission. You know, what's going on in your life? How are you serving? Where are you sinning? How's the word of God changing? You know, we talk about deep things. And so that's a place, because I do that with two other women who are elders' wives in the church. Mm. So that's a place where it's safer and appropriate for me to say, here's something going on in this specific ministry in the church, or even with a specific family. How might we, how might God be, you know, leading us to serve in this setting? But again, you still have to be super, it's not always appropriate to take it there either. But I know that I'm going to meet with those ladies once a week. And so I can share with them those sorts of burdens. I know that's a safe, protected setting for many conversations, maybe not every conversation, but for many of them. So like, I'm not going to share that burden at women's Bible study when there's 25 other women present, right? But I can share it with these other two women who've given their life to the church as well. So I do think that can be really helpful. And I think a lot of things we have to just take to the Lord in prayer as well, often to our husbands, but not always. Like sometimes there's a thing where it's like, I'm actually not going to bless my husband at all. I'm going to really discourage him if I share this with him. And so you don't want to do that. That's not helpful. So some things it's like journaling and taking it to the Lord and just begging him to alleviate that burden. And again, I probably sound like a broken record, but sometimes it's a pastor's wife in another city where you can just shoot a text and be like, here is what I'm dealing with. Yes. I know you've dealt with it too. Please help me. That can be really helpful.
Yeah. Well, you keep mentioning this, and I do want to talk about that. I think it's awesome because I think that one of the most underutilized resources that we have is one another. And it may be in our community. It may be, like you said, I have friends that I've known forever that are also pastors' wives and they live in different states, but I can call them and say, this is what I'm dealing with. And so I would imagine there's a lot of women listening who are like, my husband works on a church staff where there are a lot of other spouses, but I don't really know them. There's not this environment where what Jen just described. I don't think that that's the culture of our church, or I don't know the other churches in our community. Maybe there's a competitive spirit among churches or parachurch ministries or whatever. So what would you say to a woman in that position? How could she take some initiative where she's at?
Yeah. And I would really encourage her to. I mean, those are really valid hesitations. Like, especially if your husband's not a lead pastor and there's a culture or an environment in the church that doesn't foster vulnerability, that can be especially scary. And if there is a sense of competition in your city, which is so sad and not of the Lord, but that can be really paralyzing. So I wanted to validate those hesitations while at the same time encouraging pastors' wives who are listening to maybe be the first to initiate a change in that. I mean, I have never in all my years, and I've had to do it a lot because we've moved a lot and we've lived in settings where people have moved away. I have had to frequently be the one to go to other women and say, hey, will you pray with me every week? I need a prayer partner. Or, hey, will you meet with me every week? Or will you, I mean, I think I'm almost always the initiator. I don't know that I've ever been on the receiving end of that, because it's just been a lifeline for me. And so, and with those times that I've asked, you know, dozens probably, I've never gotten a no, that's a terrible idea. Nobody has ever said no.
Yeah.
They've said, oh my gosh, I have wanted something like this forever. Thank you for asking. When do we start?
Yes.
So I just think, try it. I cannot imagine that you will be told no. You will probably be treated like a glass of cold water from a very thirsty sister, and she will be so eager to get started.
Yes, exactly. Our community when we first came here was very siloed. Every church mm-hmm. was wary of the other, and so, it was so discouraging to me.
Yes.
But there was one pastor and pastor's wife that supported and encouraged us. And we have since then been, we're going to be those people. And, you know, my husband actually started a pastor's fellowship with pastors in our community, and the wives, we all get together with the spouse, like pastors and pastor's wives once a year at our house. But everyone, you know, I will get together individually with the pastor's wives some and get to know them. And it's just such a blessing to me to be able to not just to have those conversations, but also to know about these other churches and to develop a heart for them and to pray for them and to want their success and for them to want our success. And it makes you realize that you're not alone and you're not laboring in your community alone, that you may be different than the other churches and other pastors and pastors' wives, but that's a beautiful thing. And we can support mm-hmm. one another. It gives you more of a perspective of your own church and your own ministry.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we're growing the kingdom together. Let's be on mission together.
Yes. Yes. And it ends up becoming, it's like pouring out blessing that ends up coming back on your head.
Totally does. Totally.
Because at some point you need that friendship and you need that support. You can give it to them, and then you have theirs when you need it as well. So that's so good. Thank you, Jen, for that. And I want to close by giving you an opportunity to talk about your writing. I know that you you mentioned it earlier, but tell us a little bit about where we can find you and find the resources you're creating.
Sure. Well, I do have a website. It's jenoshman.com. And you can find me on all social media also at Jen Oshman. Yes, I had a book come out last year that you sweetly talked about on Instagram with me during COVID called Enough About Me, Find Lasting Joy in the Age of Self. And I have a second book coming out in March of 2022 called Cultural Counterfeits. And so I would love for women to check that out as well.
And you have a podcast.
Yes, a podcast called All Things, where I discuss current events and trends through a biblical lens.
Which is so needed. And I love that. I love that you're doing that. And what day is your Cultural Counterfeits book coming out?
I think it comes out March 22nd, maybe end of the month. Yeah.
Because my book for Pastor's Wives comes out in March too. So our,
I know.
It's like almost twins. I know. Well, thank you for joining me and talking with me about friendship. I'm so glad to have your insights. I know it's been helpful for those listening. So thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Christine.
Friends, thanks for listening to By Faith. If you are enjoying this season, would you consider sharing the podcast with a pastor's wife in your life? I want to be an encouragement and help to women like you and me who are serving Christ all across the globe. And as always, you can find resources and links in the show notes for the episode on your podcast platform or on my website, christinehoover.net, or on the website I've created for pastor's wives, howtothriveasapastorswife.com. Join me next week as I talk with Sarah Beals. Sarah is a pastor's wife who serves in the Northeast at a small church. I asked her to come on so we can get the perspective of a rural and small town pastor's wife, and I learned a whole lot from chatting with her. I can't wait to share this conversation with you. And until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.